When you look at someone, maybe just another person passing on the street, or your housemate, a partner, a good friend, do you see a weakness that needs to be fixed, or do you see possibility and potential? Well, today we take out our abundance magnifying glass, or after hearing that poem, maybe it's our abundance blurry vision eyes. And we ask, how can we see possibility instead of weakness? Potential instead of a defect that must be corrected? First, we must let go of judgment. My sister Charlotte was in town this week, and Charlotte's an elementary school teacher, and for the last couple of years, she's been a substitute teacher. As a sub, she receives a packet of information from the regular teacher that includes things like a lesson plan, the schedule, and sometimes the teacher includes a list of kind of a naughty and nice list. Watch out for so-and-so. They always cut in line or they'll talk back to you. They're really distracting to others. And sometimes a positive list is included. These are the kids that you can trust that are really helpful. And Charlotte actually prefers getting less information in this case. Lesson plans, of course, and behavior plans if needed. But she hates that watch out for list. She wants to look at her students with eyes of abundance, to be open to their possibility, to their potential, instead of just seeing something that needs to be fixed. Stand in line. There's another time where less information can help to create a safe place, a place that's more conducive for personal thriving. Has anyone ever heard of No Lights, No Lucra? I think I'm pronouncing that right. Lycra? It's like spandex. Well, I hadn't either until I read about it. I think there was one in Chicago when I was living in Kalamazoo, Michigan. But it's a worldwide dance movement that was started on a wintry night in June in Melbourne, Australia, in 2009, when five dance students walked into a church, an old cathedral, and turned on some dance music, Ren de Ren by Edith Piaf. And the only lights were the lights of the space heaters, just tiny little light. And the only person watching them was Amma, the hugging saint from the picture up on the wall. Otherwise, the students were free, completely free, to move however they liked. They didn't have to worry about judgment from anyone else's gaze, as long as their movements didn't harm anyone else. No one was looking at them with judgmental eyes. And this quickly caught on. The next month, the church was full of people dancing without lights, without spandex, lucra. So how do we see through eyes of abundance? First, we let go of that kind of that prejudice, that judgment. This is right, this is wrong. And second, we must stay open to the possibility for growth that is always alive in us. When the author and medical doctor, Rachel Naomi Remen, was a child, she would have monthly lunches with her older second cousin. It was part of her learning to be a more graceful person. This was her older second cousin's mission, was to help her out, because her parents, she had academic parents, and they didn't care too much about kind of graces and mannerisms. And but those kind of things were important to the rest of the extended family. And so her cousin had a mission. And beyond having parents that didn't really care about those things, Rachel had another disadvantage in that she grew tall really quickly, and her coordination hadn't caught up with her length, and so she was just kind of a klutz. She, at these lunches at the fancy Russian tea room in downtown New York City, she would spill all over herself, and one time she remembers tripping, like, full frontal, like, all over the sidewalk on their way in, and her cousin took her in anyway, even though she had blood running down her knees and dirt all over her dress. Well, these lunches stopped, and when kind of life got in the way for both of them, Rachel went to medical school and became a doctor, and her cousin started a family and got married and started a family. But when her kids started school, they resumed their lunches. And by now, Rachel's coordination had caught up with her, and she was actually quite a stunning woman. But something funny happened at these lunches. Somehow, she returned to her 12-year-old klutz. She would spill wine on the white tablecloth, drip gravy on her blouse, and one time picked up her purse, but the handle was caught underneath, and so all of the contents went all over the floor, lipstick, tampons, business cards, coins, tissues. But the thing is that this only happened around her older second cousin, who Rachel realized still thought of her as her younger klutzy cousin and expected her to be like that. So how we see each other matters. That was a negative example of what happens when we fail to stay open to the possibility for growth and transformation in each other. But this week, there was a positive example of that. On Tuesday night, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, Danica Roem was elected to the Virginia House of Delegates. She beat Bob Marshall, who had held the seat since 1992, and who is kind of one of the most homophobic people in our country. And Danica is our country's first out transgender person to hold an office, to hold an elected office. When asked if she had anything to say to the man who ran against her and who in many ways kind of fought to make her a second-class citizen, she could have said a lot of things. But all she said was, "I don't attack my constituents. Bob is my constituent now." And so maybe we can kind of cast that off. Oh, she's just being polite. But I like to think that she was offering to us a new model for leadership, for parenting, just for being, a model of staying open to the possibility in people. A model for looking through eyes of abundance. And maybe he heard what she said, and maybe that inspired him to change a little bit. There is something so freeing about being with people who stay open to the good in you. This happens more often, I've found, with the very old and the very young. So when I visit my grandfather, for example, I do think that he's able to see halos around streetlights and maybe even around my head, even though that's not very accurate, because he can't see very well. I don't worry that I have a black bean skin still stuck on my teeth from lunch, or that I'm wearing the same shirt 3 days in a row, or that I'm chronically late. He doesn't know what time it is. He can't see it. He doesn't care. This week I said that my sister was here, but actually she was here with her 5-month-old daughter, Fiona. So it was a full house. A 2-month-old, a 5-month-old, and a 2-year-old. Well, my sister and my mom and Fiona went to Kroger to get us some groceries, and my sister was carrying Fiona in a Moby wrap where she was looking outwards instead of inwards. And this was hilarious for my mom and Charlotte to see everyone that was coming their direction down the aisles. Their eyes would just light up and they would smile at this fat little bubbly baby who was also smiling and looking at them with eyes of abundance. And I think that this is one of the reasons that many people like to hold babies or be with dogs. Sorry, cat lovers. I just think that cats are a little more judgmental than dogs. They have their grudges and they stick to it. But because we want to be seen through eyes of abundance, eyes still holding out for us, still looking for our possibilities instead of where we went wrong. Like my cat holds a grudge when I don't feed her breakfast, like I didn't do this morning. One of the questions that came up in my sermon writing process was, well, what if nothing was wrong? Reading that poem, you know, what if nothing was wrong? In our weakness-addicted culture, how would we see ourselves, how would we see one another if there was no such thing as wrong? But soon the question changed to what if less was wrong? Because judgment is necessary. It's part of our creative capacity to think and make decisions. We judge when we choose not to get in the car with that friendly-seeming guy. Or we judge when we commit to sharing our offering plate once a month with organizations that extend our mission. We judge when we wear our Standing on the Side of Love t-shirts after a national tragedy. Or when we call our state legislators or write a letter to the editor. We judge when we pull out the canvas and create something beautiful or not beautiful. There is no right or wrong, right? There's no beautiful or ugly. But that is what our faith calls us to do. On the one hand, we are called to discern what is right and just in the world and support that. And along with that, stay awake to what is harmful and evil and wrong and not comply with that. Our faith calls us to judge. On the other hand, our faith reminds us that God, the Spirit of life, never gives up on us. This is what universal salvation is all about, our theology, our universalist theology, that everyone is saved, everyone has the potential for healing, and healing comes to everyone, regardless of whether you've been naughty or nice. But that universe, that salvation is universal does not mean that we have to love everyone who has harmed us. But it does remind us that God is still speaking in us, in every person, and even in our country. And we must stay open to that possibility of growth, of transformation in people. Otherwise, as Rachel's story shows, our chances of transformation are greatly diminished. We'll just return to that klutzy 12-year-old self. I think I've told the story before, but it shows what can happen when we look for the good in people. So I'm going to tell it again. Once a great order, a decaying monastery had only 5 monks left. The order was dying, and in the surrounding deep woods, there was a little hut that a rabbi from a nearby town used from time to time. The monk always knew that the rabbi was home when they saw the smoke from the fire rise above the treetops. And as the abbot agonized over the imminent death of his order, it occurred to him to ask the rabbi if he could offer any advice that might save the monastery. Well, the rabbi welcomed the abbot into his hut, When the abbot explained the reason for his visit, the rabbi could only commiserate with him. "I know how it is," he said. "The spirit has gone out of the people. It is the same in my town. The streets are bare. Almost no one comes to the synagogue anymore." So the abbot and the rabbi sat together, just discussing the Bible and their faiths. And the time came when the abbot had to leave. "It's been a wonderful visit," he said, "but I have failed in my purpose. Is there not anything that you can tell me to help save my dying order?" "Well, the only thing I can tell you," said the rabbi, "is that the Messiah is among you." Well, when the abbot returned to the monastery, the other monks wanted to know, "Well, what did he say?" "He couldn't help," the abbot answered. "But the only thing he said when I was leaving is kind of strange. He said, 'The Messiah is one of us.' Although I don't really know what that means." Well, in the months that followed, the monks pondered this and wondered whether there was any significance to the rabbi's words. The Messiah is among us? Could he possibly have meant that the Messiah is like one of us monks here at the monastery? If that's the case, well, which one of us is the Messiah? Do you suppose he meant the abbot? Of course. If he meant anyone, he probably meant Father Abbot. Certainly he couldn't have meant Brother Eldred. Eldred is so crotchety, and come to think of it, you know what? Oh, darn it. Eldred is virtually always right. Maybe the rabbi did mean Brother Eldred, but of course the rabbi didn't mean me. He couldn't possibly have meant me. I'm just an ordinary person. But what if he did? Maybe I'm the Messiah. And as they contemplated in this manner, the monks began to treat each other with extraordinary respect. And the off chance that one among them might be the Messiah, and in turn, each monk began to treat himself with extraordinary respect. And so it happened that people still occasionally came to visit the beautiful forest and monastery, and without even being conscious of it, the visitors began to sense a powerful spiritual aura. They were sensing the extraordinary respect that now filled the monastery. Hardly knowing why, people began to come to the monastery more frequently to picnic and to play on the grounds. They began to bring their friends, and their friends brought their friends, and then it happened that some of the younger men who came to visit the monastery started to talk more and more with the older monks. After a while, one asked if he could join them. And then another and another asked, and they too could join the abbot and the older monks. And within a few years, the monastery once again became a thriving order. Each of us has been given the gifts of seeing, hearing, discerning, and judging. May we use these gifts to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse. God and the universe isn't finished with us yet. May we stay awake to the growing revolution in our own soul and in the souls of each other. Alleluia and amen.